Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode. My guest today is Bob Galone. Bob is the head boys basketball coach now at Grandview Heights High School near Columbus, Ohio. You may remember that Bob was previously on the podcast during Season 1, Episode 26, just after he retired after 18 years as the head coach at Denison University. I encourage you to go back and give a listen to Season 1, Episode 26 to get a little more on Coach Galone's background. But our story continues with him taking a high school job at the age of 66, going back to the high school ranks for the first time in over 20 years. Please enjoy my conversation today with Bob Galone, the head boys basketball coach at Grandview Heights High School. Coach Galone, welcome back to the podcast. I know it's been quite a while since we've spoken. You were one of the early guests on the podcast back in 2020, right? in the early stages of the pandemic. And we'll get into when that was and what we talked about, but I want to say welcome back to the program and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you again. Enjoyed it the last time.
We had a really good visit. If anybody has listened to when it was basketball, Talking Hoops with Coach John Cook, now it's Basketball and Life. If you were a part of Season 1, if you listened at all, Coach Galone's episode was episode 26. In 2020, right just after he had retired from Denison University. And so, Coach, without rehashing your entire story, because it's already out there, just for anybody that maybe hasn't listened yet or had been away from it for a little bit, talk a little bit about, in as briefly as you can, but where you were and kind of where we got to where we are today. We'll talk about your decision to get back into coaching and your position at Grandview Heights in just a moment. Just a quick recap of your coaching career in general and your time at Denison.
Well, you know, my coaching career is 40-some years long, but I spent 33 years as a head coach, 15 at Bishop Reed High School on the west side of Columbus, and then 18 at Denison University as a head coach. And just in the – I just knew sometime during the season, the 2020 season, it was just time to step away. I was tired of – first of all, I was living in Columbus. I was tired of 18 years of driving back and forth, and I was tired of recruiting. Just a little burned out, to be quite honest. And I at that time, I didn't think I was done coaching completely. But I just knew I needed to step away from that job. So in the spring of 2020, about 3 days before school shut down because of the pandemic, I resigned from my position. And then didn't have anything, and it wasn't much on the horizon. So Denison had said to me, hey, we'd like to keep you around, you know. So I taught and advised there for 2 years, and which was a really good experience. Did some anti-racist work, which is a really good experience. And assisted at Westland High School for 2 years, just on the side, and was just about every practice and all the games and things. And that was a really good thing to get back being an assistant because I wasn't ready to be completely done. And last year, I actually spent a year as a full-time at Dublin Scioto. One of my former high school players, Mike Muller, was the head coach, and I was his assistant, and I was in charge of in-school suspension. So been pretty active the last 3 years, but in a different role. But those 3 years as an assistant really were good for me, really good for me. It helped a lot of things kind of crystallize in my mind. And this spring, the Grandview job opened up, decided to take a look at it.
Well, I am fascinated to talk about your description of things that crystallized, because I think maybe I've said this on a few podcasts before, but I have a really good friend in coaching who told me once years ago that he felt like every person who goes into coaching and becomes a head coach ought to at some point go back to being an assistant after they've been a head coach for an extended period of time. He just felt like it. There's real value in it, in whatever the role is. Now, you are probably one of two or three guys that I know that left the college ranks and ended up helping at the high school level. Bill Brown comes to mind over in Indiana. He was helping at a couple different high schools. So when you are out of it for a little bit and the pandemic just changed nearly everything for nearly everybody, but I'm going to guess that you're a little bit like me in the fact that even during the pandemic, the one thing that you can kind of lean into is basketball's always got something you can study, learn from, gain from. How did you approach staying connected to the game for that couple of years when you weren't necessarily having to try and figure out how to operate your own program? What was your kind of your focus and how you tried to invest your time?
Well, just learning from the coaches I was working for. Just some different terminology, different ways of teaching things. different ways of dealing with kids, different problems. You know, I came from a small liberal arts college. Before that, I was at a small Catholic high school. And all of a sudden, you know, being at Westland, Dumb and Soda, we're talking 1,400, 1,500 kids plus, whole different environment, whole different set of circumstances. Learning how to deal with that. And what was nice is you could learn to deal with it when you weren't in charge, you know. And so I could just learn and I could offer my 2 cents worth. But at the end of the day, it wasn't my program. And so, you know, I was learning from those guys all the time. I was learning how to deal with kids who were coming from different circumstances in some cases, you know. But in the end, they're still kids. They're still young men who want direction, who want guidance, who want to play basketball. So that was kind of the common thing. But I kept active with my coaching friends, went over to practices at Denison and games at Denison, stayed in touch with those guys and learning from what they were still doing. You know, just talking to people on the phone all the time. I two guys I really respect, Tim Casey, who at that time was at Upper Arlington, now at New Albany, and Jeff Quackenbush at Newark, learning from them and going to their practices in the spring and summer, you know, their workouts and things, and even getting to some of their practices during the regular season helped me stay on top of things.
Coach, I'll tell you what, I think one of the things that I felt very fortunate to be encouraged to do early in my coaching career that I think maybe a lot of young coaches have missed out on, because there are so many resources available and there's so much stuff online and you can get stuff directly into your email every day. I still think there is absolute, almost unequaled value in going to watch someone practice.
No doubt. It's the difference to me between doing a Zoom meeting with somebody and having a personal meeting with somebody. It's the difference between teaching online and teaching in person. I just think the whole thing comes together better. And what's amazing, and I told this to a young coach the other day, I said, you can't be afraid to pick up the phone. The worst thing somebody can say is no, you know?
Yeah.
And several years ago, I wrote a letter, and I ended up at the Spurs training camp 1 year for 3 days. You know, just because I wrote a letter to Greg Popovich, didn't expect an answer, got a phone call from him. I ended up down there for 3 days watching them. And I've been to practices all over the place. But the thing is, too, you don't need a bunch of money or anything. There are tons of great high school coaches, grade school coaches. There's guys around that have done this stuff forever. And to see them do it in action is the greatest thing. You really get to see how things and how their players react, what they do when they react and all of that. It's not the same as reading it or watching a short video clip.
So just out of curiosity for me, I have an odd curiosity in things like this. When you've been a head coach for over 30 years and you've had the journey that you've had and you get plugged into an assistant's role, how long was it before you're sitting at some practices or you're maybe at your own practice and you're making mental notes or maybe even jotting things down on paper? How long is it before you start thinking, man, if I'm ever a head coach again, this is going to be really valuable?
Oh, day one. I mean, it wasn't that I was upset or really mad about what the head coach was doing. It was just, I can take that and use it, or I think I'd do it a little differently. And what was great then, I'd been around enough, and of course, having coached Mike, Coach Mouse at Reedy, and then knowing Rob Hayes at Westland, I was comfortable enough I could challenge those guys on things, or even just not even a challenge. Sometimes just, hey man, how come you do it this way? Why are you teaching stride stop instead of jump stop on a power move to the bucket? And all of a sudden, you know, that's what we're using now at Grandview, as a stride stop on most of our moves and things like that. But it's day one. I don't know if you ever quit thinking like a head coach, you know, if you've been there. And honestly, I'm not so sure, even for guys who've been lifetime assistants. I don't know this, but I would guess that they're always thinking, I might try doing it this way. I'm going to suggest that. So now it happened from minute one.
I don't have a hard time envisioning that. I think it's funny. I've been out of coaching and just trying to stay connected to coaches now for several years, and still the same thing. Like you get that coaching toolbox email and you open something up and you think, boy, there's value in this. And I got a file on my laptop that I just keep electronic things in. I don't know that I'm ever going to do it again, but it just keeps me kind of plugged in. And I said this once to a guy not terribly long ago and I want to get your take on it. When you become an assistant after the amount of time that you are a head coach, I said once that I really think the ideal position for any assistant coach is to do everything you can to make the head coach's life easier without making your own life unlivable.
That is a great way of putting it, because I thought I did a decent job of that in both jobs. You know, like, for instance, at Scioto last year, Mouse taught at a grade school, at one of the Dublin grade schools. He couldn't even get to the gym till 4 o'clock. So our guys get out of school at 2:40 and they got till 4 o'clock. So I just started, hey man, everybody's in the gym by 10 after 3. And we did all their individual work then. And I loved that. It was my chance to have a lot of input and develop relationships with kids and hopefully help them improve a little bit. So he got there at 4, you know, we get about 40 minutes of individual and just motion shooting drills in and a lot of work that way. But you know what? At the end of the day, when I walked out of there, I wasn't getting phone calls from parents. I wasn't having to go meet with administrators. I didn't have to make sure the bus was going to be on time, all that stuff. So it was a good situation. It was great.
Now, during our first podcast back in 2020, you talked a lot about the importance of and the value of the relationships with your players and what it was like after they left your program and what you hoped to accomplish with them. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the similarities or differences between trying to build those same types of relationships with guys that are maybe 3, 4, 5 years younger than the types of athletes you spent 18 years coaching?
Yeah, I don't think there's much difference. There's just a difference in what experiences those young men are having, because I had done this in high school, you know, and when I went to Denison, what I found out in college is, number one, you're not around the kids as much. You know, in high school now, it's year round. Let's face it. We can say what we want about dead periods or anything else. You're seeing your kids an awful lot. It's not the same in college. So I had to be a little more intentional about seeking those relationships and getting guys into my office for whatever reason, so I could get to know them better or show them up at events that I knew they'd be at, so I'd get to know them a little better. But in terms of what you actually are doing, I don't think it's much different. You're trying to find out what they want out of life. You're trying to find out what makes them tick, what's good for them, what's bad. You're trying to find out a little more about their background, you know, how many siblings they have, what kind of neighborhood they grew up in, what's important to them, those kind of things. I don't think that stuff changes a whole lot. I think it's just you have to do it with a little more intention in college, quite honestly.
Yeah, you have to kind of create the opportunities maybe more. Yes. I think there's a lot of truth to that. So with the high school students, I guess, were there any hurdles to creating a connection when you have, you know, more of an age gap? Like you'd been in coaching for 40 years. These guys, you know, a lot of these, their parents might not be 40.
I was concerned about that. And I actually brought it up in the interview, you know, because the guy I replaced, Ray Corbett, is my age. We've known each other forever. And he was getting out. And I said, are you concerned about hiring another old guy? And they just laughed. And so one of the things I did in terms of, I made it clear from the beginning to the kids and to parents and everybody that this culture is going to be built on two things, and that's relationships and high standards. And so the first thing I did to make a connection was I visited the homes of all the kids coming that were planning on playing basketball from eighth grade through senior. And that took some time, but I got in the homes, met the parents, met the kids, talk to them about my vision, and spent, you know, anywhere from half an hour to an hour with all those people. And I think that helped create a little bit of a comfort. You know, it's not something coaches normally do. It's not, you know, and I was one of these guys years and years ago. Well, hey, I try to just stay away from the parents, don't want to get involved. And I think you've got to, it's reality. That's what relationships are about. You know, it doesn't mean it's always going to be smooth or whatever, but I think it gave the parents a chance to see what I was about, what I was going to emphasize, et cetera, et cetera. And then in the month of June, and I'm just finishing up now, I've been meeting with every player individually, and I make them come to my house. And we just meet on my front porch and just talk a little bit, very little about basketball. Once again, I'm just trying to get to know them a little better. I've lived in this community for 26 years, but I don't know the Grandview community because I was always somewhere else. And so it's a chance to figure out where they're coming from. Again, what they want out of life, what's important to them, what's not. And then we might talk a little bit of basketball at the end, but not a whole lot. I'm just trying to get to know who these guys are. So that, I think, has been the big thing I've done. in terms of, hey, man, yeah, I am 66 years old. Yes, I am getting old, but I still got a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm for this program. I'll be honest, and this is not a cliche. This is not something I'm saying just to say it. I don't blow smoke up people's rear ends very often. I'm as excited about starting this job as I was when I started reading when I was 30 years old, when I started a college job at Denison in 2002. It's really an exciting opportunity.
Well, I'm curious about that, and I want to dive into the program that you're taking over here in just a few minutes. But as a guy who's known you from a 30,000 foot distance and mostly known you through mutual acquaintances, so the conversations I've had about you are far greater than the number of conversations I've had with you. And so, you know, Guy Neal, Rich Benzman, guys like that who knew you, that's where I kind of got my perception of who you are. And then when we had the podcast a couple years ago, the thing that stood out to me is, one, energy level, two, passion, and three, clarity of purpose. Those are three things that I would use to describe you just based on what I've learned about you and in what limited interactions we've had. And so if those are you and you get to that place after a couple of years doing what you've done at the high school level, was it always going to be, or when you made the decision that you were, you know, maybe going to try to be a head coach again, was high school the only step, the logical step? Were there college opportunities that you thought you might look into, or did you stay locked in on high school because of the, you know, you mentioned before you'd gotten tired of recruiting and some of those things with the high school setup, it's a little different. Was there ever an option for maybe taking a look back into the college ranks?
You know, not really. I considered maybe, hey, Damon Goodwin's a friend of mine out of Capital, going out and see if he needed any help, or maybe calling up ODU or somebody like that. But as far as head coach, no. Honestly, one of the things I wanted to do when I left Denison was simplify my life. And you simplify your life by, you know, coaching in the same area that you live. You know, so last year, the last 3 years have been pretty good because I've coached within 15 miles of my house. Now, I ride my bike up. Like, I've got a weight workout. I got to open the weight room this afternoon. I'm going to ride my bike up there. It'll take me 3 minutes. You know, that helps simplify things. And it wasn't that it had to be this job, but it's the matter of simplifying my life so I'm not running all over the place. I'm not driving 30 minutes to go to practice, that kind of thing. And I just felt high school was a little better that way.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And realizing, and I didn't until very recently, that you had lived right there in that community for a lot of your time at Denison, that certainly was not a big barrier, but certainly a hurdle to making things work in a situation like that. If you don't mind, let's just take a 2 or 3 minute break here, and I'll get some things organized. I want to dive right into Grandview Heights, the community Grandview Heights, the program you're taking over and what it looked like, and then talk a little bit about your steps. You've already gotten into some of the specifics, but get into some generals and then more specifics about getting your fingerprints and your brand, if you will, onto that program.
Okay, great.
I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One-time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration, and now back to the podcast. So, Coach, you get your eyes toward the opportunity that opened up in the spring at Grandview Heights, and we mentioned right before the break, you'd lived there for a lot longer than I realized, and I'd like you to just talk a little bit about, you know, outside of the fact that at least from the on the surface, it looks like a natural fit. I live right here. I always have. It's something I'm interested in. Describe the community that you're in and the program that you're taking over in terms of recent history and maybe what made it appealing to you. And then after that, we'll get into some of the priorities for creating your program.
Okay. Well, Grandview Heights is a suburb in the city. We're literally, I can run downtown in about 15 minutes. I'm from downtown Columbus and campus. We're that close. So we're a suburb in the city. We're the smallest public school in Franklin County, about 350 kids. It's not very big. And so lots of 2 and 3 sport athletes. Following Ray Corbett, he'd been here 36 years. And actually, a little side note, I followed him at Reedy. He was at Reedy 1 year, and then I took over for him. So it's kind of interesting. But Ray won over 500 games, 8 district titles. I think went to the Final Four in 1998, I think was the year they went to the Final Four. So there's some basketball history here. And so I'm hoping I can keep it going with what they've had going with the boys program here. They've done a really – he did a really good job. So, you know – and I never dreamed I'd end up coaching here. I mean, we're on the same side of town as Reedy. I was a Reedy guy. People in the community knew who I was, but I'd never really, you know, I'd go up to see a game now and then, but I wasn't part of that high school community. My daughters went to Reedy with me, so they weren't in the school system. So we didn't know people that way. So when the job opened up, my daughters and my wife both said, why wouldn't you look at it? So I just sort of thought about, well, everything's right here. It's a good program. Nice facility, da 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 da, and more I thought of it, more it started making sense to me. Hey, why wouldn't I? You know, again, talk about simplifying your life and making it easier to be an effective coach, because literally, I've had kids this summer, well, I can't make this or that, you know, like an individual workout. Okay, I get it. You're doing other things. How about we do it at 4 o'clock? How about we do it at 6 o'clock? How about we do it at midnight? I live that close, and this is my job now, so there's not a whole lot of wiggle room. And I'm not trying to make them feel uncomfortable, just trying to show them there's a whole lot of ways we can make this work. So it's been a pretty good situation that way.
So it's a solid program. You're taking over for a guy that you can clearly respect. I've always kind of been curious about the challenge, or the, I don't even know if difficulty is the right word, the delicate nature of taking over a program where there has been a high level of success and introducing a new way of doing things. And maybe the delicate way that you kind of have to approach that. So from a priority standpoint, what was first thing for you, like job one, day one, what did you feel like was going to be the most important thing in getting yourself established?
Well, like I said to you, it was establishing relationships, getting to know parents, getting to know kids. And one of the things I've said to them, whether they enjoyed playing for Coach Corbett or would have preferred something else. Hey, I'm not Ray Corbett. Not going to try to be. He's a great coach. He did things his way. I'm probably going to do things a little bit differently. I'm a little bit different in my approach. And made that pretty clear, and I think that's helped, you know, for people on whatever side. Because, again, Ray had been here 36 years, so it's going to be easy for some people to say, hey, you're not doing it the way he did it. He had a hell of a lot of success. But you're here 36 years, you got people that, gee, I wish you'd done it differently. You know, and Ray and I laugh about that all the time. It's just the way it is. But I've made it clear that it will be different. You know, we're going to be a motion man-to-man team, not real fancy, not a whole lot of plays. We're trying to teach kids more how to play, and definitely we're going to develop a culture that really has a purpose and a why to it, beyond just winning games. And I'm really, really adamant about that. I've been doing that my whole coaching career, and really have zeroed in on that probably the last 15 years or so in a big way. My last few years at Denison, my last several years at Denison, and then these last couple years even as an assistant were things I introduced to the coaches I was working with. So those things are taking priority, but it all starts with those relationships, getting to know the kids, getting to know the parents and the community a lot better. And then the second thing, like I said, I'm going to build the culture on high standards, is establishing those high standards, whether it's in drill work, we expect this number of makes in this many seconds, or in the weight room, we expect this much progress here, that kind of thing. Just saying, hey, there are high standards, and they're going to be difficult for some of you to reach. That's okay. We're going to keep reaching for them. We're not going to back off of that.
When you talk about the relationship piece, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the first segment about, you know, maybe previously you would have, you know, kind of created space between yourself and parents, and now you want to make sure that you're getting connected to them. You know, one of the things that's been clear to me, and I'm starting my 29th year in public education here in a couple of weeks, and in the last 10 or so years, certainly 10, maybe even a little bit less than that, I just feel like there's such a different relationship now that the students have with their parents. that the kids that I am with in my school every day, or the kids that I would coach if I were, it's a little different. Like they're quicker to reach out to their parents when something's not right. They're quicker to contact their parents. And so I think what you said about trying to get connected to the parents is awfully, awfully important. And in a school the size that you're talking about, which isn't a huge school for the Columbus area, has there been a good response? Have the parents been open to it? And how's that relationship piece with the parents? How's it developed so far?
It's they've been very open to it. And I've had comments made, you know, geez, my kids have been playing sports for 20 years and no coach has ever come to our home. And didn't say whether that was good or bad. They just made that comment. And I thought, yeah. And it's not an easy thing for coaches to do. And there's only so many hours in the day, but it's not something we normally do. But honestly, John, I started kind of moving in this direction my last few years at Reedy. We were in the district finals, I think, for the last 5 years I was there, something like that. And in those years, I told parents, we're going to have a get-together at my house after the district final, win or lose. Would like to have you all come, and da-da-da-da-da. And then I would just pick out, I had one parent in particular I was pretty close to who never gave me any trouble and just was a good guy, but I said, hey, you let them know they're on my turf now. So there's going to be no discussion if we lose about why we lost. There's going to be no discussion about who played, who should have played, or anything like that. We're just going to celebrate a good season, because whether we win or lose was a good season. And those were really good get-togethers. They were really good get-togethers. And it made me realize, you know what? I know these people don't all agree with me, and that's all right. That's their right. But here's the deal. The thing is, we should be able to get along together despite that. We are adults. This isn't junior high, you know? And at Denison, had a rough time with some parents early on and just kept plugging at it. By the time I left there, you know, I had parents that were constantly, not calling me every night or anything like that, but had some very, very good relationships that I still have to this day with the parents as well as the kids. And it was because I was a little more open to them. And my daughters and my wife have just done a great job of cultivating those relationships at games. Not necessarily sitting with the whole crowd of parents, but going over and saying hi to them, acknowledging them. How are you doing? You know, how's your daughter in college? All those things. And so I've realized they don't have to be my enemy. And you know what? They may not be my friend either, but hey, we're all looking to try to do the same thing. You want your son to be happy and full and to grow. I want him to be happy and to grow. So let's try to work on it together.
Well, I wish you luck with everything. About 10 years ago, I took a high school job, ended up only being for a year, but I opened up to the possibility of in-home visits, particularly with the high school players, and wanted to start with the seniors. And I basically said, I'm not going to force anybody to do this, but if you would be willing to sit down with me and meet with me, I would really like to at least all the high school, you know, varsity JV age players. And I think I ended up having four total, you know, and I don't know that it necessarily impacted one way or the other how the experience went, but I think it was it resonates with me when you say that people would say, well, no one's ever offered this before, and whether they think that's a good or a bad thing, because some people said, we've never been through this before, and they obviously were comfortable with it because I was in their house. Some people who said, well, we've never done it that way before, clearly weren't comfortable with it because I never went to their house. We never had that conversation. But when you start that process and the relationship piece is developing, the next most important relationships that you have are with the guys that are going to be on your coaching staff. Can you talk a little bit about the opportunities or challenges that were present in trying to put together a staff?
Well, it really ended up working out pretty well for me. I kept a good bit of Ray's staff. His varsity assistants, JV coaches, freshman coach, and one of the eighth grade coaches. So I'm still looking for a seventh grade coach. I brought a young man with me that I'd worked with at Westland High School for 2 years, who's really, really good. He's going to be another varsity assistant. But it's been really good working with these guys. They've been very open to what I'm doing. Some of the stuff is not that much different from what Ray did, especially basketball-wise, tactically, you know, that kind of thing, the way we do things. But they've been very open to whatever I want. They've been very good about educating me about the community without putting in their own biases, maybe, that kind of thing. And so it's really worked out pretty well. And I think part of it is, in the end, it's like anything else, you know, these guys just want to coach. And I think they're happy for the opportunity to stay where they've been the last few years. They're comfortable here. A couple of the guys live right in the community, but they're very comfortable here. And I have tried to give them a lot of input on the few practices we've had and in the scrimmages we've had and the individual workouts we've had. I think they've appreciated that. There's some things I've changed about the way we're going to approach it. But I think they're looking at it as an opportunity, one, to coach still at a place they like, and two, an opportunity to learn and see how things might be a little bit different and it might be done differently. And whether that's good or bad, they can evaluate for themselves. But it hasn't been much of a challenge because I interviewed these guys all individually, and really I asked the same questions out of all of them, and that was, number one, why do you coach? Two, why do you coach the way you coach? Three, how does it feel to be coached by you? And four, what's your definition of success? And I've got those all in the notebook, and I'm telling you, the answers were just off the charts in terms of why they do what they do and how they do it. They've obviously internalized for themselves, this is why I do it. It isn't just I love basketball. It isn't just I like competition, want to win games. They're really concerned about developing young men, and that was my biggest concern. And we can go from there. So that has really helped me. I really like our staff. And I think going forward, we'll start getting together here at the end of the month in terms of starting to put some things together, practice plans and things like that. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I'm getting excited hearing you talk about it. It makes my juices flow a little bit. Now, instituting a program and trying to get some things established is not necessarily a linear process. A lot of things overlap, but if you created a checklist, your checklist would include things like, you know, building relationships with players, building relationships with the staff, and eventually somewhere down that list, you get to the actual basketball stuff. And you've referred to yourself as a motion offense and man-to-man defense kind of guy. And back in our first podcast a few years ago when we talked about the changes to the game, and they've really, it's almost accelerated, I think, in the last 2 to 3 years, how the game has changed and the way it's people are embracing analytics and the importance of the three-point shot. Now, you've got a couple different things in play with high school kids that maybe didn't exist with the college situation. So when you want to do the things you want to do, and we'll get into some of the X's and O's maybe a little bit, you've got a summer now with high school that you wouldn't have had with college. Can you talk about how you implemented that and what that was like for you to have that actual summer instruction time?
Yeah, well, we actually, you know, obviously you can have 13 days with your team doing team stuff. So we had, I think, 5 practices, and then we had several scrimmages with, well, 5 or 6 scrimmages. So maybe we had 6 practices and 6 scrimmages. It might have worked. And so the practices, I just tried to introduce the basics of what we were going to do offensively and defensively. And a lot of that was just more conceptual than anything, John, you know, sharing the ball on offense, pushing the ball up the floor hard. We're not going to shoot 1 pass 3s till you prove yourself to me, things like that. Defensively, it was mostly about just pressuring the ball and helping and recovering and then rebounding. The scrimmage situation was interesting because I purposely progressed it from teams that were a little more like us, inexperienced, with not a whole lot of guys with a lot of varsity experience. Until the end, we scrimmaged DeSales, coached by one of my other former players, and they're going to be very good again this year, and they just whacked us. But I talked to guys and about that, and part of it for us too is we have some kids, like any high school team, missing at different practices, missing at different scrimmages, and we just tried to tell people we expect you to be doing something legitimate if you're not here, you know. And usually it's kids playing baseball, kids playing soccer, doing other things. But anyway, so through those practices with the team, through those scrimmages with the team, we were able to start building a little bit of teamwork, a little bit of a system. We also did individual workouts a couple times a week with kids that they could come to when they were available. And sometimes we'd have 3 kids at those. Sometimes we'd have 9 or 10 kids at those. And, you know, those, you could do those in groups of 3, and we'd have enough coaches there. We could divide the guys up, trying to work on our individual stuff. And all that stuff was teaching them to shoot, or teaching them to cut and move and get shots out of our offense. You know, so in other words, you know, we've got guys going to set a down screen, coming back to the ball after they set the screen, and they only had jump shots off of that, that kind of thing. So that's what we did this summer. And it gave the coaching staff a chance to work together, and it gave the kids to get a chance to start fitting into what we're going to do. So June and July went pretty fast, and we were pretty busy. Right now is dead period. The guys are lifting, I hope, 3 days a week. You know, I can't do anything with them. I can open the weight room, which I do on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at 4, but they have another opportunity to go in the mornings. We have a strength coach here at 9. So hopefully they're getting up there 3 days a week, and then we get back at it in September.
So how quickly with your team, when you describe install and the things that you do on the offensive end of the floor, I guess I'm talking about primarily, how quickly do you get to 5-on-5 in terms of progressing to that with the way you want to run your offense? Is it a process where it might take most of the summer to get there? Did you guys get into 5-on-5 within the first couple practices? How do you view that in terms of when you want to get to 5-on-5?
We had to get into it early within the first few practices because, you know, if you're going to do some scrimmaging, which I thought we needed to do to see where our guys were at, yeah, we got into it right away. And, you know, we've got the same problems in motion that most people do. Guys staring at the basketball, guys not willing to, you know, just have trouble envisioning what to do without the ball when it's not being part, you know, not in their hands. So in other words, if you're on the backside, the ball's on one side, you're on the weak side, you should be looking to screen with somebody or move or work with somebody over there to get them open instead of staring at the ball and see what it's doing. So it's going to take time, but it wasn't terrible. I'll tell you the great thing about these kids. We don't have a whole lot of varsity experience coming back. What we do have are guys who are pretty hard workers. They're not afraid to give effort and do what you ask them to do. And secondly, which really impressed me, is how unselfish they were offensively. The ball would pop sometimes just really well, getting ball reversal, looking in, getting it back out, that kind of thing. And that's a big plus. Guys were not afraid to make one more passes, which we really stress in our offense. So, you know, in that sense, that was a big thing for me because when I first took over at Denison, it took a couple of years to get guys really understanding that just because they're open doesn't mean they got to shoot it, even with a shot clock. And that was a problem. These guys, that was not a problem. There were a couple times in scrimmages, guys took wide open one pass threes, and I pulled them out and explained to them we need to do a better job of that. Unfortunately, when they would make two and three extra passes, we'd get the same shot back later in the possession, and we'd nail it. You know, and that's one of the reasons we're doing it right now until we become better shooters. So unselfish offense, really, that's going to help us. That we're ahead of the curve there. Where we're behind a little bit is in our skills. Our skill development needs some work.
Well, you mentioned something during that about, you know, being wide open doesn't mean you have to shoot even with a shot clock. Back when we spoke a few years ago, you talked pretty openly about the idea that you feel like maybe a shot clock in high school would be a really good addition for high school sports. Number one, do you still feel that way? And number two, what do you think would be the biggest obstacles to maybe seeing that come to fruition in Ohio?
I can go with it or without it. I think it could be good, though, because I do think, first of all, most shots come within 30 seconds anyway. There's very – even patient teams aren't taking that much time off the clock. It's the way the rest of the world is playing, so probably we ought to be considering it. I don't like it because I think if you get a team that's a little bit got some discipline and some toughness, they can stretch the games out and compete a little better. So I don't like it because of that. But I do think it's going to happen. I think I think the biggest thing holding from coming in is the cost and who are you going to get to run the shot clock? Because you go to college games, especially at the small college level, You know, probably once a game, you got a malfunction or a quick, you know, the guy did time it right or whatever else. Where are you going to get people in high school to run those clocks for you all the time? You know, and then the cost of getting the extra equipment. So I think that's still holding it up a little bit. But honestly, I don't think it would be a terrible thing for the game. I used to think that way, but I don't anymore. I think it could be okay. I see coaches a lot of times overcoaching in my mind, not letting kids play. And they might say, well, my guys can't do this or they can't do that. I get that. Develop them. You know, you've got to get them to the point where they can do those things. And that's my whole thing is teach them how to be players. Every kid on the floor ought to be able to handle the ball, ought to be able to shoot it a little bit, ought to be able to do, you know, be able to do some things that you don't have to feel like, hey, man, we can't compete with these guys.
Well, Coach, in the last maybe 10 minutes that we've got here before my timer tells me we got to go, I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit because now you've got me curious, and I thought it was a maybe the one nugget from this podcast that guys will take away. You said four questions for your assistants. I'm going to ask you four questions. Why do you coach?
Okay. Why do I coach? I use this with our guys. My purpose is to help develop selfless, educated, competitive young men of character and action. Those are the five pillars of our program. That's what we said at Denison. That's what we're using here. That's why I coach. I want to develop those kind of people. And it ain't always going to be pretty. It's not always going to be easy, but it's what we're trying to do. And if we can develop selfless, educated, competitive young men of character and action, we're going to win our share of games. So that's why I coach. That's what I think my my charge is. That's what I should be trying to do. And that's everything for us. So either way we play, we expect extra passes. We expect everybody to play defense. If you're sitting the bench, we want a bench warning at least once from an official during a game. We don't want a technical. We want a bench warning because our bench is cheering too much. They're too loud. They're getting, the official can't see over them, all that stuff. We want that kind of team, that selflessness. And then off the floor, we're going to do community service. We think that's really, really important. You know, and I can go on in all five of those pillars, but they're going to go on and off the floor. This is what we're trying to create. The way we play, I want educated people. In other words, you know how to play basketball. You understand that we're not going to make you robots. You're going to play based on our structure. You know, the ball's going to go inside out. The ball's going to get reversed. You know, we're going to help in our gaps, all those kind of things, you know. And then as a student, you're going to show up to class and get engaged every day. You're not going to cause problems. You're going to be on time. That's part of being educated. That's part of being smart. And I can go on and on, but that's why I coach, is I want to create, help create those kinds of individuals.
Well, I've always had a tremendous level of appreciation for people, and you're one of the people who can answer something succinctly and what seems to be simply, but then if we get down to the depth of it and dig into it, it's not really simple at all. It's not easy. I mean, there's a lot to it, and you can have your five pillars, and they're pretty easy to grasp, and then the depth of them is what's important. But I believe you said your second question for your assistants was, why do you coach the way that you coach?
Yes. Yeah. Why do I coach the way I coach? Well, the way I try to coach is I try to coach with a growth mindset. In other words, I want my guys not to fear taking some chances in order to improve. I don't want them to play it safe, but I also don't want turnovers and things like that. But we try to coach with a growth mindset. We try to coach in such a way that we give our players a decent amount of autonomy. We try to get them to feel like they belong to something bigger than themselves. And we try to get them to see that we're making them better people and better players. I don't want a player leaving my program saying, hey, man, I got to be a lot better basketball player, but I didn't want, you know, the guy never had a conversation with me. He didn't know anything about me. At the same time, I don't want a player saying, man, good guy, got to know me. You know, we had a lot of great talks, but I didn't get one lick better as a player. That my job is to help them improve in both ways, and so I try to coach that way. And you know, it goes for everything else we do. We try to coach in such a way that the team, the kids, develop relationships. And that doesn't mean they're necessarily best friends, but when they're on that floor together, you can't tell that they're not best friends. They know how to get things done together. And that's part of what life's about. You know, you don't go to work every day with your best friends, but you got to get a job done. You know, if you're on a faculty teaching like you are, you know, all those people, you might not be tight with all of them, but you all have a common purpose, and you're all willing to do what it takes to make that purpose work. You know, and I want to coach and make these kids. I have high standards for our drills and the way we do things, the way we act, all that, because if you can adhere to high standards, even when they're uncomfortable, you can do almost anything you want in this life. So I think that's a valuable life lesson for kids.
And the third question you said you asked was, what is it like to be coached by you?
Yeah, the first time I heard, I actually got these questions from a guy named Joe Herman, who is kind of a life coach, coaches football in the Baltimore area. He's a former pro. But anyway, that one kind of hit me in the face because I've always been demanding and tough, but there were times, you know, I was borderline stupid, the things I'd say to try to get kids motivated and all that. And I thought to myself, what does it feel like to be coached by me? I'm sure my guys know I care about it, this and that, but some days they've got to think this is not the way I want to be treated. And that really made me think a lot about this. So hopefully what they say, what it feels like, he's really hard. He takes no excuses about anything. But I know he really gives a damn. I know he really wants us to improve. And it makes me feel like I've got a chance to grow and I've got a chance to win anytime we go out there.
And what is your definition of success, Coach?
I just think seeing continual improvement out of your guys, that's your definition of success. Seeing a team that improves on the floor and off the floor from day one to the end of the season. And sometimes you'll have enough talent that that'll result in the number of wins that everybody wants to see, and sometimes it won't. But if you've improved from day one to day whatever, I mean, it's a long season, I think you've made real, real progress. My definition of success is that long after they're done playing in our program, they still feel part of that program. You know, at Denison, we were getting 30 and 40 guys back for our alumni game every year. You know, in fact, we had to have two alumni games so everybody got enough playing time. You know, it was one of those deals. And so that was cool to see. And those guys will, after big wins, I'll still get emails from guys, did you see the big red beat win tonight? Or dad did this or did that. That means a lot. Last year was the 20th anniversary of our team at Reedy that got beat in the state finals. So they were having their class reunion in August. So the night before the class reunion, I invited all of them back to my house for a cookout just to share some time together. Well, I also invited back every other player I'd ever coached at Reedy that I could find. And we had over 100 people here. To me, that's a success. You know, we had guys here that never had a winning season at Reedy. We had guys here that played in four district final games and that kind of thing. And those guys, it was like they connected. That team that went to the state finals, two of those guys had not been back in town for 10 years. They'd been out of Columbus for 10 years. And they came back. Those guys sat around that night till 3 in the morning talking. And you know what was interesting? I was around them all night. And I heard very few remarks made about, do you remember when we won that game by 30 or we won that district final and how we beat that team? It was hardly about that. It was almost all about days in the locker room, stuff they did, things I never found out about, you know. It was just about being when they were kids. These guys are now 38, 39 years old, and they're sitting around talking about stupid crap they did when they were 17 years old and laughing their butts off. Some of them see each other all the time. Some of them hadn't seen each other in 10 years, but you wouldn't have known it. They all sat together the whole night and just reminisced. It was so cool. And then there's other guys and the other teachers that came, the other groups of people that came were in and out doing the same thing, you know, because they were all from different eras. But it was a really cool night, and I think that would be my definition of success, that you could pull a night off like that and have that kind of response.
Coach, I appreciate your candor and your honesty with that. You may have just given me a staple for the podcast going forward, is to present those four questions to coaches, because I don't care who you are and whatever your line of work is, I think reflecting on those four things, there's value in it. I said before, there may be a nugget or two in some of these podcasts that young coaches can take or older coaches can take that'll help them do what they do. And if it's not in coaching, if it's in another area of life, there's value in that. The basketball and life concept for the podcast is that it's you can't ever really separate the two. And I think the guys that are doing the basketball part successfully have all the pieces in place to do the rest of it successfully. And you laid out some things that I thought were really good. The last thing I want to ask you about, and you can take as little or as much time as you need to respond to this, but when we talked back a few years ago, you talked about spending time at the end of your time at Denison, really invested with, I think the guy's name was Tui. He was a life coach.
Oh, Kevin Tui.
Talked to Kevin every day for like a 5-year period. I am assuming that there are big chunks of what you gained from your interaction with him that you can apply to high school, but do you see it as directly applicable and an easy way to continue to establish the same kind of foundational parts of your program that you really liked at Denison?
Absolutely. I mean, Tui is the guy that told me, hey, man, I like what you're doing, but what's your purpose? Well, you know, I want to win games. I want to help kids grow up. Well, that's nice. Can you put it down in something they can read and they can something? That's where I came up with Selfless Educated, you know, Competitive Men of Character and Action. It was like he made me verbalize that and make it something they can see and then define it. You know, don't just say selfless. Tell them what selfless looks like. Tell them what selfless looks like and make them. And if they don't do it, then they don't play. You know, this is what you've got to do. He gave me the phrase PCP, players coaching players. You know, these kids, you know, you put them in lines, you're running drills, and how many times are they doing things half-assed? And coaches will say, well, I can't watch everything. No, but the guy in line before him and after him can. And if they're really good teammates, they're going to help each other with that stuff. And that's stuff that we constantly try to do, Tui. And then the third thing is, Tui taught me what all kids want, or what he said he believed all kids wanted in their lives, was direction and consistency. And by consistency, he meant you can't come in one day and scream your ass off and cuss them out, do all that stuff, and the next day be hugging them. And he said, you've got to find a consistent way to get what you want out of the kids without demeaning them. And that really said something to me. We aren't consistent as teachers, as coaches, as parents. We're not consistent in the way we behave because we let our own issues get in the way of being consistent with the people that we're charged with helping. And I know that's hard. We're all human. We can't be perfect. But if we have that in our minds all the time, stay consistent, stay consistent, stay consistent, we say we want to be positive leaders, demanding but positive, then we can't, you know, constantly be throwing negative stuff at them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's solid gold.
He really, but you know, Tui was cool though, because he was a competitor. He had coached college basketball, high school basketball. I've been a good basketball player. He wasn't a softie. And he said to me one time, don't you dare quit coaching him hard, Bob. There's nothing wrong with coaching them hard. If they got a problem with that, they're not competitors. They're not players. You can coach them hard without being demeaning. You can coach them hard without being negative. Being negative, you know, telling them the truth is not being negative. The way you tell them the truth can be negative. So yeah, absolutely. I learned so much from Kevin. It's really weird. There will be days I'll be in my car at, you know, 6:37 in the morning, I'll get a phone call and I'll think, it's Tui, because that's when we always talk. Well, Kevin's been gone since 2016. Oh. But it's funny how I still think of him about stuff like that, or I'll read something and think, God, Tui would love this. He would be into this. Because we did. We stayed in touch all the time. So anyway, everything he taught me really has been applicable. And actually, I've probably been taught. I said to him one time, Tui, this stuff ain't rocket science. This is all the stuff I learned in Catholic schools all my years. And he just laughed at me. And he said, yeah, but you didn't learn it well enough to figure it out for yourself. So the bottom line is, and he was like this, you know, none of this is rocket science. None of it is. But it's getting people to adhere to it and stick to it. That's the hard part. That's the hard part. And, you know, that's why my dad told me a long, long time ago, you know what, Bob, when you're working with kids, don't ever, ever give up on them, but don't ever, ever give in to them either. And I think that's a great way of putting it.
There's no doubt. Well, Coach, I can't tell you how excited I was when Matt Winters let me know that you were getting back in. I was incredibly excited to hear the news. I'm really hoping to get down there to check out your team either during the practice season or certainly once the season starts. For sure. When I started looking at doing repeat guests on the podcast, it really was about trying to get people back on who have had changes in their life and their basketball life, and how we could talk about that transition and what it's been like. I know that you're a lifer in this game, but you're also your commitment to the idea that you're using the passion you have for basketball to develop the kind of young men that whole communities can be proud of is incredibly admirable. And I just want to say thanks again for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. I don't want to eat up your whole afternoon, but I do appreciate it.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Welcome. You're welcome. I enjoy it. One thing I do want to say is those four questions aren't mine. They come from a guy named Joe Erman, E-H-R-M-A-N-N. He's a speaker. He's a coach. Played pro football. He's got a great story. He wrote a book called Inside Out Coaching. And that's where I got those four questions. And I just think those hit me, but there's so much more in that book. That is incredible. I think I read it once a year, and I think people would do themselves a favor by getting that book and reading about Joe and his life journey and who his coaching idols are. It'll shock you. It's pretty cool. Well, so anyway,
I think we have a small but passionate listenership here on this podcast. So I'm sure some of them will be scurrying to pick up that book. And if that's what they do, then that's another reason why I'm glad we do this. I need you to do me a favor, if you could. When you get a chance, tell Rod Overmeyer that I said hello.
Oh, absolutely.
And glad to hear that he's going to be a part of your staff.
In fact, we're meeting tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. He's doing a great job. He's really, really good. And he still can play. So,
well, there's no
the gyms have gotten better.
You don't shoot it that well and suddenly lose that ability. I can tell you that.
No. I never shot it that well, so I never knew what that was like. But, no, he still plays with our kids, and then he's a really good teacher, really good with individual workouts and everything. So no, I'm very fortunate to have him.
Well, give him my best and my best to you and your program. And thanks so much again for your time, Coach. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Take care.
Yep. Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.